This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Duncan, Cobargo is one of the towns worst hit by the firestorms that ravaged the south coast on New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the generosity of Voice of the Martyrs, over the last 2 days, our street team have been delivering water filtration systems to families in the area who have been experiencing water supply issues as a result of the drought, and even more so after the bushfires contaminated their water tanks and dams with ash and fire retardant. One of the recipients of the water filters is Helen Schaefer, and she joins us on the show right now. Good morning to you, Helen.
Good morning. Good morning.
Helen, can you take us back to New Year's Eve and your experience with the bushfires?
Yes. Simple question, convoluted answer. It was December the 30th that we knew it was coming. There had been a lightning strike up in the Badger Forest, and it didn't take long before we could see smoke and flames rolling in. To cut a long story short, the word was that we wouldn't be seeing any fire until New Year's Eve day, so that's the 31st, obviously. Mm. And we were as prepared as we could be. And we, like many other people around, thought and expected to be fighting grass fire and embers. That's what we thought. By the time we got to about 10 o'clock, we could see the flames rolling in. We have a lot of mountains behind us heading up to the narrow area and lots of ranges, and we could see it rolling in. It looked like a volcano. It'd get to the top, blow, and then sort of roll down like lava, really. We've got photos to remind us of it. And then it'd disappear into the gully and then come up. So it kept rolling, but we still didn't realise what was going to hit us, and we had no idea the rapidity or the ferocity with which it was going to hit us. So roll forward to about 1 a.m. We'd been up all night watching, and we'd had a spot fire go to the back of our place that we could see going up to a road behind us, sort of closer towards Cobargo, and we'd done the ring around and told them to get out, basically, unless they were really prepared. Still thinking we weren't going to get hit until the next day. We had Tim and Aaron Solway, who people have heard about, out at our place at about 1:30 a.m. Timmy had about 175 of his Jersey cattle next door to us. They'd been out there sort of thinking about what to do. They came up, had a drink, had a bit of a chat to my husband, and, you know, he said, oh, I better get home, I'm going to have to get up and start milking soon. So even then, we still didn't realise that it was going to hit only 2 hours later. So within 2.5 hours, we were in the middle of a firestorm and burnt out, and Tim and Aaron had lost their father and their brother. It happened that quick. Mm. So going back to us, it was all of a sudden it was on four sides that we could see, but it was that the back, the northwesterly side, that it really rolled in and just swept in like nothing we've ever seen or heard before.
I mean, Cobargo's a beautiful area, and you know you're kind of in a bushfire zone where you might have to face it one day. I mean, how do you prepare for something? You said you had to prepare. What are you preparing?
Yeah, it was interesting because my husband grew up here. This is his family farm, and he'd always said that if a fire got us, it would come from the northwest, because we're not far from the Wabillija National Park, and there's a valley that comes through, and we were always thought that would be the way it would come, which is certainly how it did come. He'd been preparing, being very aware of the risk. His dad had been one of the first fire captains around this area, and, you know, he just knew. So the way we prepared was to make sure there was nothing under the verandas, no combustible material at all. It was down to dirt. He told me, no, we couldn't have mulch on the gardens anywhere once it had all disappeared, and stuck to that. And got rid of all the leaf litter and any combustible material under the verandas, as I said, around the house at all. Cleaned out all the gutters. We had old towels up there ready to plug the gutters, which we did on that morning of that day. And then we proceeded to water and water and water. So he ensured that the tanks up on top of the hill, about 40,000 litres over two tanks, were full over the week before. We filled up the gutters and we just literally started hosing under the verandas the walls of the house, because it's cypress pine cladding, timber verandas, etc., are just kept soaking. We've got a machinery shed behind us which had a gap underneath the wall, and he said, just keep watering there so that if embers go in under there, they'll go out, which is exactly what happened. So it was getting rid of any combustible material and water. That was it. Plus, you know, of course, I was in that day thinking, oh, well, I've seen it on the movies. What you do is you fill up your baths and your sinks and all of that. So we had eskies and buckets, and we even had a wheelie bin out the back just full of water, because we were also concerned because of our water situation and polypipe and spots being exposed, that if we lost the water from up on the hill, that we'd have something to fight with, you know, contained in baths, et cetera.
Now, you managed to save your house.
We did.
Which is fantastic. But some of your relatives weren't so fortunate.
Oh, that's exactly right. So Wayne's elderly, somewhat eccentric cousin, Carol, who lives on her own on a property of about 400 acres, the vast majority of which is bush, which she loves with the wildlife. She lost everything. She lost 55 of her small flock of sheep, and she managed to save two. George, the 10-year-old merino, who's got the most amazing fleece, and little Jenny. She actually could hear the fire coming, and she lives few k's away from us, about 7 k's, and she heard it coming. She knew what it meant. She'd been there for nearly all of her 75 years, and she screamed help, and a neighbour who lived down the hill, so that the sound travelled, heard her. He raced up with his son and son-in-law to get her. Carol Van Carol refused to leave the property without her sheep, George, who weighs about 60 kilos, and her lamb. So the three of them bundle Carol into the ute and the two sheep and race down to his place. So, yeah, he saved her life, no doubt about it, and she saved George and Jenny's life. So about 3 days after that, they've moved in here and have been here ever since. My sister-in-law also, she was in Cobargo, 25 k's away from us. We sent our daughter, two cats and two dogs, in to her to be safe, and some precious things, you know, the kids' photos and that sort of thing. At the time we were fighting the firestorm here, we got two phone calls, one from Wayne's sister and one from our daughter screaming that the house was on fire. So while we were fighting it here, Gail's house was going up in smoke, and they were running out the back while it was actually on fire in the front. So, yeah, it was all happening. And that was a spot fire that went to Cobargo. And the rest can be seen on various footages.
Helen, you got that going on. Plus, you know, I mean, obviously you're rescuing some of these animals. You're a vet by trade. There has been just kind of a massive devastation to the wildlife population in the area. You know, as someone who cares for animals, knowing that you've saved some, plus all the homes that have been burnt down. And I mean, how are you reacting and processing through all of this?
Oh, we're praying a lot, that's for sure. One of my favourite psalms is, look to the mountains, where will my help come from? Psalm 121, there's been a fair bit of that going on.
Love it.
And I think, well, we're all in feel like we're in a bit of a parallel universe, I think. My mantra lately within our family has just been, be patient and kind with the people you come across, but also ourselves, because you sort of start to think, oh, I should be doing this or I should be selling that, and it's a matter of getting rid of the shoulds and just thinking, like it's recognising, I guess, as much as we can comprehend at the moment that it is trauma. Everybody's been through it. I mean, a lot of people have been through a lot worse than we have, and we often think of the Sawways, of course, who we're actually related to, but that's a great leveller when you think who they've lost. You know, three generations within a very short time. So I think it's just taking one day at a time, making sure we do something each day and move forward, focus on what we have, which is each other. Like took us a while to get all our family back together. It wasn't until the night of New Year's Day that we could find everybody. In the meantime, my husband had lost his sight because his corneas were damaged in the fire, so he couldn't see for 48 hours. Mm. So by the time I got everybody back together and that happened, we just spent time appreciating what we had, you know. And in the meantime, it's helping out where we can with neighbours and just making sure we keep ticking on. And as I said, just being patient and kind with ourselves as well as each other.
Helen, I mean, here at Hope, we believe in the power of prayer. What kind of ways can we be praying for you?
Oh, I think just that we will be, and I guess specifically for us and our families, that we will continue to be patient and kind with each other, and that we'll continue to focus on the fact that, as we often say, that this isn't the best to come. Like the best to come is later, and that is a great source of hope and encouragement. And in the meantime, just that we'll trust that somehow, even at the moment we can't conceive how, good will come out of it. You know, we are strong believers, Wayne and our daughters and myself, and we do hold on to, you know, that bit in Romans where it says God works all things together for the good of those who love him. So we do hold on to that. We can't possibly comprehend how this is going to be good, but we do trust that something good will come out of it. And we just really pray, and I guess ask that all Christians will pray, that through this, more people will be drawn to seeing that this is not all there is, and that there is more, and that Christ is the one to focus on. Because if you thought this was everything, we're looking around the place at the moment, that would be a bit disheartening.
Mm. Helen,
I think that's a prayer.
I'm keen to know, so I guess as the media moves on and the focus moves on, people might assume, oh, there's rebuilding happening right now, but we're still at the start of February and there's still going to be a fire threat for some time. What is happening on the ground as we speak? Are people still displaced? Has rebuilding started at all yet?
No. Well, I'm sitting here on our front veranda. We haven't had power since the 31st of December. We're just looking at Essential Energy, who have been remarkable in how many crews they've had on the ground, and the energy and the attitude of these young teams. My husband keeps coming back saying, oh, they're all young fellas, and they're saying, we just want to get everybody connected back in, and just so full of energy from all over the country. So, many of us are still in the more remote areas, are still waiting for power. It's coming. In terms of rebuilding, oh, no, because while we're... the fire is over for us in terms of the actual fire. There's nothing left to burn. There's a bit of green coming through, but we're sort of in the safest place. And yet not that far from us in the south of the valley, people are still fighting and on edge and being evacuated. So it's not until we get rain, which we're hoping and literally praying for. It's due this weekend. Usually this is the weekend that the Cobargo show's on, the country show. And we always have a joke that we either have a flood on the Cobargo show weekend or it's 40-degree heat. Well, they're actually forecasting floods, which, while we don't really want a flood because the hillsides will literally wash away, it does look like rain. So I think everybody mentally and literally are feeling that if we get this rain and the fires go out, then we will be able to move towards rebuilding. And again, that's mentally, emotionally and physically on the ground. But until those fires are out, everybody's so on edge. And if they're not having to be evacuated, they know somebody who is, which keeps it very real and very much on mind. You just can't relax.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Voice of Martyrs are sending down some water filters. What kind of impact will the water filter have for you in your household?
Oh, it's huge. We were so excited when I got that phone call from Natalie saying it was coming. And we've spoken to some friends down the road who were doing it pretty tough. They were very excited too. We live on the Yarra River water, which prior to this has just been a beautiful source of water. It's pristine to the point where it's ruined us, and particularly me, drinking water anywhere else because I can taste and smell the chemicals in the cities and the towns immediately. So it's just been beautiful water. Now, because of the heat and the ash, etc., there's dead fish, and the eels and the fish have died in it. Animals have died in it, wildlife. We also know that there's been cattle around the place that have died and many other animals. So it's completely contaminated. So thus, while Wayne was able to hook back up, so we do have running water eventually, it's only good for, you know, washing in and washing clothes, etc. So we've been living on bottled water. That's been all donated, which has been wonderful. It's, you know, we even clean our teeth in bottled water, etc. So what it means for us is that we're no longer dealing with bottled water, which is great, because it is amazing how many plastic bottles you end up with, and that's, you know, got its own issues. But it will mean that we can use the water that we have literally on tap and be able to drink it with confidence. It's massive. We are very, very, very appreciative of it, because our water source won't be viable as drinking water for, I can't even imagine, it's going to be a very long time. Because not only do we have the contamination currently from the dead aquatic animals and terrestrials, but if we do get this rain, there's going to be an enormous amount of erosion and silt, etc., and contamination. In fact, it'll probably be, well, it'll be worse visibly after the rain. So it's going to be a very long time before we have a potable water source on hand. And this will give it to us. It's amazing.
Well, Helen, know that we're praying for you here at Hope, but if I can give you any encouragement from Scripture, I think of Galatians 6:9 and the passage where it says, "Do not grow weary of doing good."
Yeah.
I just want to give you that encouragement, because
we
love what you guys are doing, and just the heartbeat you have for the community there. Keep it up. Hopefully these water filters can make a little bit of an impact, and, you know,
they will.
You keep on investing into that community there and demonstrating the love of Jesus.
Yeah, well, thank you. And can I just say that something like this is just a constant input of encouragement to us that people do care, just because, and, you know, we know from you guys it is because of Christ, and that's what we do. It's looking after each other. We thank you for that.
Bless you, Helen.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.